Hello again, and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, the podcast where two best friends and TV writers solve all of the world's problems in however long this show is. I am one half of this podcast, a writer for Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, author of the book How to Fight Presidents, and a guy who once lost a high school backyard boxing match to a stationary wheelbarrow, Daniel O'Brien. And I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Soren Bowie. Soren, make like Lionel Richie or Adele and say, hello.
Hello, everybody. I'm Soren Bowie. I am a tea drinker. I'm a non-smoker, a Christmas decorator. What else? I've had sex in a tree, and strangers have named their babies after me.
Do you know what? Can you guess? Let's test our friendship telepathy.
Okay.
What I want to talk about based on those things that you've described yourself as?
Having sex in a tree?
Nope.
Being a Christmas decorator?
Man, no.
Tea drinker?
Yep, that's the one.
Okay, yeah. Oh, boy, I could talk for ages about tea.
I did not know you were a tea drinking bitch. Does that?
I became one, yeah.
It doesn't upset your stomach at all?
Love it. No, it doesn't upset it at all.
What kind of tea are we talking about here?
Oh, I fuck with it all, man. I do, on an average day, I'm going to do like a black tea, just like an English breakfast. And what I do is I put a little bit of honey in it and a little bit of half and half. And it's so good. And then occasionally at night, I'll also drink some chamomile. And this, we're really in the throes of tea season right now. And it's made me so happy. I get a peach passion from Celestial Seasonings. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of people know this, but with Celestial Seasonings, you know the difference between the caffeinated and the not caffeinated, because the caffeinated teas are all upright. The art on the box is upright. And the non-caffeinated are all horizontal and laying down. Isn't that cute?
I guess.
It's very cute. You don't fuck with tea. You do coffee, though.
I do. I do coffee. I've been trying to wean myself off on coffee, as I've been trying to like wean myself off on almost everything in the world. But tea has always, the specific caffeine that is in tea messes with my stomach in a way that coffee doesn't.
How interesting.
Yeah.
Because coffee feels like so much more of an abrasive substance, in my opinion. But maybe that's just because I'm not a coffee drinker.
You're not, yeah. And I've also been drinking coffee since I was 13 years old, so it's just like part of my blood at this point.
Your body's used to it. Yeah. So growing up, I thought Earl Grey was the only tea that existed, because that's what my dad drank, and I was like, fuck this. I hate tea. It's stupid. And then I didn't realize that there are all these other great teas out there. And I'm not the type of person who's like making my own tea, or like I have artisanal tea bags or those little strainers or anything like that. I will just go to the store, get boxes, but man, I will drink the shit out of some tea.
Man, growing up, I thought Lipton was the only kind of tea that existed. Yeah. It's not even a kind of tea. That's just a brand. And I was like, oh yeah, that's the tea flavored tea.
I don't even know what you'd call it. Yeah. It's a black tea, but it's just like the most basic black tea. It's like a gas station coffee. It'd be the equivalent, I guess.
And is that like every morning you have it?
No, I don't even drink it in the mornings. I do like a little afternoon tea. It's to, so I don't eat up my house. Like it's a real great way for me to, it's an, what do you call it? Appetite suppressor.
Mm-hmm.
And otherwise in the middle of the afternoon, my instinct is to just go and eat and eat and eat. And if I don't want to do that, I'll make a big cup of tea. And now it's gotten to the point where I look forward to the tea.
Huh. Well, that is very interesting to me. And, also proves that we failed a fairly crucial friendship test, because you did not know which thing was most interesting to me.
I wasn't even close.
No, you weren't. I guess we could talk about the sex in a tree thing if you want.
Not really.
Okay.
Thanks to Postmates for supporting Quick Question. Postmates isn't all just burgers and sushi. I mean, it is that, but you can get a lot more. You can order anything from toilet paper to phone chargers, from stores like Walgreens and 7-Eleven, and a Postmate will just drop it off right outside your front door. Download the Postmates app and use code QQ.
Thanks to Hawthorne for supporting Quick Question. Hawthorne is a premium tailored personal care brand that's making it easy for guys to feel and smell their best. Take Hawthorne's quiz today and get started on your personalized self-care routine by going to hawthorne.co. with promo code QQ to get 10% off your first purchase. Just want to be clear, it's hawthorne.co. Is there anything about what I said that you want to talk about, or have you already forgotten?
I've already forgotten. Let me think if I can remember what you Well, see, I get so you're so good at it, Dan. Let me just have you sit on the compliment couch for a second. Your introductions are so good and they're so on brand. They're so perfect that all I can do is then think about mine and be like, all right, well, you got to get yours right. Yours has to be good because there's just two of you here.
I think, I don't know if mine are good, but they're certainly dense. They're very rich, but I think a problem that we found ourselves in is when I go first, then you go, then there's no time to talk about whatever.
And I do want to do that. We've glossed over a lot of ones now that I listen to the old episodes where I'm like, oh shit, I'd like to know more about that. What was yours this time? Tell me again.
The one that you laughed at was a guy who once lost a high school backyard boxing match to a stationary wheelbarrow.
First of all, you have to qualify that it was stationary. That like it wasn't just like a wheelbarrow that had learned to box.
No, but, yeah. It was, I wasn't even like this was someone's parents were out of town one afternoon. So a bunch of people decided we're going to have a boxing match in Dennis's backyard. And like a card was built with people who, in our high school minds, made sense. It was like this big kid versus this big kid. And then like the welterweights and then the lightweights, whatever the different things are. And I had not intended to fight. I was just going there after theater practice. So I was like still in like Pirates of Penzance face makeup just to watch this fight and cheer on my buddy. And, we didn't have ropes or turnbuckles or anything like that, or a ring. It was obviously a backyard. And then two of the fighters got too close to me, so I got spooked. And I started to back up, and then I tripped over a wheelbarrow. And that like ended the proper fight that was actually going on because it was so ridiculous. And then when the results of the fight were published the next day, mine was included. Daniel V. Wheelbarrow in a total knockout.
Whoever wrote that is great.
It's very funny. I really appreciate it.
I think it actually helps your story that you weren't wearing boxing gloves when you got beat.
No, I was an audience member wearing eye makeup.
I do remember how worlds could collide like that when you were young and you had several interests and all your friends represented one of those interests.
Yeah.
Because like you would get done with theater and you'd still have like mascara on your forehead to be old age lines.
Right.
And you're like, and now we're going to go drinking out in the woods.
Yeah. I was like, no, I can't go home right now. I can't go to friendlies with the rest of the cast because I got to watch my buddy Scott fight my buddy Steve in the woods.
Well, that's not so bad, Dan. All you did was trip over a wheelbarrow. That's okay. It's just,
yeah. It's still, I mean, like it's still a bad record to have.
Yeah.
For all great. my boxing experience.
Uh huh. Cause you're 0-1, right?
I am. I'm 0-1 to this wheelbarrow who, I mean, for all I know, is undefeated.
certainly a boxing. My brother and I, when we were young, would fight a lot. And just bicker and, you know, punch each other and stuff. And my dad was sick of it. And at one point he was like, I'm getting you boxing gloves, and ordered them from a magazine, which is how you used to do it. And these adult boxing gloves arrived at our house when I was 4 or 5. And when I would put them on, they came all the way up to my elbow and I couldn't sustain like a fist in the air for very long because they were so heavy. Mm-hmm. And my brother and I were intended to box in those when we would fight. And I think it was him trying to dissuade us from fighting because.
Right. It's the smoke the whole pack of cigarettes in one sitting approach to fighting.
So we went down to the basement to fight. And my brother punched me in the face so hard that the next memory I have is him over me saying, don't tell mom. Please don't tell mom. Please don't tell mom. He said that. And his telling of it was that he hit me in the face. I fell to my knees, got this glazed look on my face. And then he really realized he had a good opening right there. And he shot his shot and punched me as hard as he could in the face while I was on my knees and then fell over backwards. So it's possible when I was a child, my brother knocked me out.
Was your dad? So your dad wasn't reffing this. He was just like,
no.
Take these gloves. Goodbye. Yeah.
Yes.
That's missing a crucial part of that parenting technique.
occasionally he would come down there too, and the way that he'd do it is he'd wear one boxing glove, put the other hand behind his back, and then he'd be on his knees, and he would just fuck us up, like not in a way where we'd have welts or anything like that, but like you getting punched with a boxing glove when you're a kid, you're like, oh man, that hurts. That doesn't feel very good.
My dad didn't box us when we were kids. Like he was a boxer. We had a punching bag in the attic that he worked all the time, but he would wrestle us, and it was very fun. Like if you were playing basketball against my dad, he would let you win, I think, a few of the times. But if we were wrestling three boys on my dad, we're all going to like wrestle. We're going to like get into a skirmish in the living room or whatever. He would fucking destroy us. Yeah. Not like a violent way, but just like make it clear that we, all three of us with all of our strength, couldn't handle him. He's like pinning two of us with one hand and putting his hand on the head of another with his other hand, and just like making it clear that he was the definitive alpha in this house. Looking back, it's incredibly funny. At the time, it was like, we're never gonna beat this guy. What do we gotta do? We need to have we need more kids, I guess.
I remember doing that with my dad, my brother, and I trying to fight him in the basement, and at one point my brother going, we're just kids. But I do get the same joy out of doing it to my son. I just physically overwhelming him, because kids are also very charmed by that at a young age. I guess they probably get over that. But while he's still charmed by it, like it's a very fun game for both of us that I'm so much stronger than he is.
Yeah. Certainly when I worked at a summer camp as a 17 and 18 year old playing basketball with second graders on like a severely reduced court height, basketball rim height rather, and them doing their best to take a shot and me just fucking spiking it out of the air was great for me and also fun for them because it's a big dramatic moment.
You and I used to volunteer together at a place that where we worked with children.
True.
And a lot of it was us just playing with the kids, and our games were very physical with the kids. Like it was a lot of like throwing them in the air and like letting them climb on our shoulders and stuff like that. And occasionally there would be a kid who was too big for his britches. We'd be playing organized sport where a child would be like in football. He would catch a pass barely. He's afraid of the ball. He caught it, but he's like scores a touchdown and then starts gloating at the other team, who was like kids who are maybe like 2 years younger than him and 2 feet smaller than him. And so it became a thing that I enjoyed doing where I would just go over to him and push him down and just remind him, you're not that great.
You might be great one day, but for now, you're very small.
Yeah.
And you have no money.
Look at this. That's one hand. I haven't exerted myself and I've pushed you to the ground.
I'm texting you while I'm doing this.
Thank you to Postmates for sponsoring this podcast. I'll tell you, Dan, I'm getting Postmates tonight.
What are you getting, Soren?
A brand new restaurant that I've never tried before. And I'm getting a salad there. Is that exciting or is that boring?
It's real boring. It's very boring.
Yeah, but I don't want to. What I don't want is to get something that I really go for it, and I don't get like a lamb vindaloo at a brand new place and be like, oh Jesus, this is not great. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to start with something basic, something I know everybody can make. I'm getting a salad, okay, and that's coming to me via Postmates. With Postmates, you can get food delivered without leaving your house or even opening the front door. With the current state of the world, Postmates created a no-contact delivery system. So now
are you going to mix the dressing in there, or are you going to put the dressing on the side?
I'm not on the side. I don't want them choosing for me how much dressing goes on that. When I order from local restaurants, like tonight, everything gets left right on my doorstep, and the app lets me know when it's been delivered. I don't have to do anything other than literally lift a finger. And part of the reason that I like ordering locally is because it's important right now that we support and uplift our communities. And what better way to start than with the restaurants? They're hurting, ladies and gentlemen. And so anything you can do to help them. It's also the holiday season. Think about the possibility of, instead of getting material possessions for other people, get them the gift of Postmates. Allow them to support their local restaurants. You're basically giving presents to the restaurant and you're giving presents to your loved ones. Just download the Postmates app on iOS or Android and find your favorites and get anything you want delivered within the hour. For a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $5 off your first 5 orders for your first 7 days. To save $5 on your first 5 deliveries, download the app and use code QQ. That's code QQ for $5 off your first five orders when you download the Postmates app or sign up online. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it.
Let's get into the show where we ask each other questions and give each other answers. Do you have any?
I'd like to go first here.
Okay, yeah.
I got a question for you.
Okay.
When you were young, what was the town hangout? Like probably middle or high school age, but the place where all the big kids hung out. Like at first it was a little scary, that area, because that's where the big kids would hang out. And it was probably somewhere where they just like, they didn't want to go home, but they needed somewhere to all be.
Right. I want to start by saying that there was probably a better, cooler place that better and cooler people hung out. But for me, which is like middle tier popularity, we hung out in the 7-Eleven parking lot because no one ever kicked you out of there. You can go into the 7-Eleven. You wouldn't have to spend too much money and you can get a soda and some scratchy lottery tickets and a hot dogs. But if you buy four, there's a price break. That's a hot tip for everyone. Four 7-Eleven hot dogs is a good bang for your buck. And then we would just sit in that parking lot and talk. And sometimes you would like watch other cars drive around in circles in the parking lot of the 7-Eleven. And that was like, that was what we did for entertainment. We'd just sit there and like wait to see who else showed up at the 7-Eleven to briefly join you in your strange parking lot party.
So I have a theory that there
drinking, by the way. And no one was doing drugs. It was just like a place to be where you wouldn't get kicked out.
I have a theory that there are a lot of people listening going, holy shit, that was my exact life experience.
Really?
Because I think in every town, it's a 7-Eleven or like a convenience store where the kids do this. Where it's just like, yeah, the only thing, it's exciting because everybody's there, but nobody really knows what you're doing or like what the plan is. But it's nice because usually when we were growing up, there's a payphone right next to it. That like, if you had to call home, be like, oh mom, we're doing this instead. Or whatever it is, there's food inside so that if one kid has $5, all of you can eat. And you're just so excited to see everybody else. And for a while when I was young, it was like such a scary, scary place because the big kids were all there. And I think that they hung out in the 7-Eleven at my town because it was also next to the only traffic light in the town. And the traffic light let you know when curfew was. And if you were under 16, you weren't allowed to be outside at night. And that traffic light
How did the traffic light do that?
Both directions just blink amber forever, for the rest of the night, until the morning.
Is amber yellow in Colorado?
Yes.
We only have three in the rest of the country.
Amber is the middle color. Amber is yellow. I don't know why I called it amber. it just blinks yellow and throughout the night because there's not enough traffic that you need reds and greens. And so then they all knew when they needed to go off into the fields or go wherever they were going to go after that because you weren't allowed to be out. And kids famously loved breaking curfew. But up until that point, after school, whenever, like all the kids just went there. And then once everybody could drive, it became a very big deal that you would meet up there in your cars and then people would drive around town and they just go up and down the main strip of town, which is like a quarter of a mile or a tenth of a mile. And if you saw somebody going the other direction from you that you knew, you'd look in your rearview mirror and if they tapped their brake lights, that meant that you're supposed to go meet at the 7-Eleven.
Oh, when did you learn that? Did your brother hand that down to you or...
No, I'm trying to think. I guess when I hung out with a couple of older kids when I was maybe in eighth grade and I was in their car and they taught it to me.
Yeah. I feel like it's a thing that at the time felt like a very cool underground thing. It was like, oh yeah, we're going to hang out in this parking lot where you can go into 7-Eleven and buy like a Black and Mild. And smoke it if you wanted to, no one could stop you. But at the same time, it was also like the 7-Eleven that was in the same shopping center as the Kohl's and the Supercuts and the Nobody Beats the Wiz.
So very cool.
Yeah, we're not in the middle of the woods or anything. We're not like off the beaten path. we were off a highway.
Yeah, it was. I think it's true of everywhere. I don't think it matters whether you're in a city or a small town. It's like there's that convenience store vibe where you get out front. You're not totally supposed to be there. Occasionally the guy will come out and be like, hey, that's too much. That's too much. But mostly it's just like a bunch of kids kind of shouting at each other. And it's so exciting to be there.
Yeah. And I think part of it was that, like, because if it wasn't 7-Eleven for us, it was Dunkin' Donuts, just getting coffee and sitting in there and then sitting outside of the Dunkin' Donuts. And in both of those cases, these are undeniable 24-hour establishments, which seemed important to us. Like you can't hang out at Nobody Beats the Wiz because they close at 9 and then a few years later, forever. But you can hang out at 7-Eleven all night if you want to, and they can't kick you out.
We used to go to my friend Cameron's house, who lived just on the outskirts of town. We would say we were going to sleep in his treehouse, and then we would go out into town just to break curfew. Like
Is that the treehouse where you had sex?
No, I didn't have sex in a treehouse. I had sex in a tree.
Okay.
So moving on. We would go into town just for the, I mean, not with a plan, not because we had to be somewhere. It was just like the idea of breaking the law was so enticing to us that we were like, and now we will go into town when we're not supposed to. And then just dodging cars, assuming everybody's a cop.
Yeah.
And going to see is there anybody at 7-Eleven? Is there anybody who dare go to 7-Eleven this late at night? It was just this golden place that this Mecca we were all headed to.
And did you feel like that was like the hot spot for the upper echelons of your town and your school? Like, I definitely don't feel like 7-Eleven was. I know for an almost fact that there was a cooler place that other people were hanging out.
Because the cool kids were mysteriously absent.
Right, because I was the coolest kid at 7-Eleven. And I know that's not right. Historically, that's impossible.
I'm trying to think. I bet there was. I bet there was somewhere else. Oh, you know what? There was. It was called, what do they call it? Three Poles, I think, is what it was called. And what it was is as you drive through town, there's a big hill. And it's got these like red rocks and then three telephone poles at the top. And you could get up there and the kids would hang out because you could see the police coming down the road if you needed to scatter into the woods. But I was never invited to Three Poles. I never went to a single party there. I think those kids were more interested in things you couldn't do in front of 7-Eleven.
Right. It's crazy that you're not that much older than me, but you're also somehow from Dazed and Confused. Like that idea of just like, we're partying in the deep woods at this tower.
Well, that's what we would do for the most. In high school, when we would go to parties, it was about going onto people's private land where like there were a lot of ranches. Mm-hmm. And some of the kids in the school, their parents owned those ranches. And so you'd go out into the fields and have a bonfire. Because that's not property that, you know, the police can't come out there.
Right.
And then the other thing we would do is go up to the ski mountain in Glenwood Springs, Sunlight Mountain, way up in the mountains where there weren't any other houses or anything. So nobody hears you partying up there. But the police that they found got wind of it. They just wait at the bottom of the road for anyone who tried to drive out of there.
Yeah. It's crazy how there are so many different worlds in small towns. Like I had my 7-Eleven time and I had my normal like parties that I thought were fun, but I didn't drink at all in high school. I didn't drink till I turned 21. And I went to a high school party where there was drinking. It was like a New Year's Eve party. And the only like popular party that I'd been invited to in high school. And the parents there were like, if you're going to drink, you're not like, give me your keys right now. If you're not going to drink, then you can hold on to your keys. But like, we're also okay with everyone drinking here.
Yeah.
Period. And that was so far from my world. It was like, oh, the mom is okay with it. She's watching my friends drink. This is insane to me. And I was like, no, I like this is a nice party. Thank you for having me. My last birthday party was we went to see X2, X-Men United at the theater together. And then we went home and did improv games.
I like that your first party where there was drinking, you hugged close to the parents.
Yes.
And just like tried to ingratiate yourself to them.
Yeah. I was like, no, you don't need to take these keys from me, ma'am. Hey. In fact, you can take the night off. I'm going to chaperone these kids.
I got it from here. yeah, I do remember how startling that was the first time that there was a parent that was like, yeah, you guys are going to drink here? That's fine. That's cool. We'll be down in the den. We're going to be watching a movie.
Yeah. You're
like, no.
I don't actually know. And like, I'm obviously not a parent and you're not a parent. You are a parent, but not in a way that you have to think about these things now. But I don't know what's better or more responsible if it's the insistence that like you should never drink underage, or if it's like you are the acknowledgement that you're going to drink, and if so, you should do it with parental supervision. Like those are two schools of thought, and I don't know which one. I like the one that I was raised under, which is don't drink until you're allowed to drink.
Yeah.
But you know, I know plenty of people who didn't do that and are not in jail now, so
I don't
know. Who the hell knows?
Yeah, it really sets some strange what is the word? Not barriers, but like sets ground. The ground rules are much Soren. Just a second. What is the word I'm searching for? Is that some strange? Oh, fuck it. Forget it.
Is it boundaries?
Yes, that's the word.
Yep.
It sets some strange boundaries for the kids who live under that roof where they're like, all right, we know this is illegal, but, and your friends are going to do it anyway, but we'd rather you do it in our house. I guess kids will be more open with them about telling them about their own, like other experiences with sex and things like that. But still, it's like a, it seems like such a slippery slope. My dad had a deal with me, which was that if I wasn't allowed to do that stuff. If he found out about it, he'd be very upset. But if I was ever in a circumstance where I was at a party or I felt like I was uncomfortable or I needed to get home, no matter what, I could just call him, no questions asked, and he would come get me.
Yeah.
That feels like a good middle ground to me.
Yeah, I like that too. And like we never had that talk, but I imagine that my parents would also do that same thing. But I think they kind of knew early on that I was too square to be in a position where I drank so much that I needed a ride home. They were more likely to find me coming home at 8:30 and being like crying. Being like, the girl I like took out some vodka in the woods, so I left her there.
The your stage makeup running down your face. The only picture I've seen of you from high school, you're carrying a clarinet in it. Mm-hmm. And you're wearing a pretty big, kind of a ropey sweater. A braided sweater, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so every time I picture you as a child, that's the image I have. Like it's you're in the woods carrying a clarinet for some reason.
That's fair. I can't substitute that with any other picture that would be better in any way.
We're going to find out at some point. Like we'll have Caitlin Large on this podcast or something, and we're going to find out. She's going to be like, no. Dan fucked. Dan was crazy. And this whole thing is going to shatter around you.
Yeah, it'll destroy my reputation, which I deeply rely on because I need nerdy versions who identify with me to buy my books. And so, like, if I don't have that, if they suddenly found out that I was like 9 to 5 pounding it down with New York Sixes, I would be fucking ruined financially. I need those nerds to think that a win for me is a win for them. So that's why Caitlin will never be on this podcast. That's why no one from my past will ever be on this podcast.
That's totally
no one
fair.
Can know how real life cool I am.
Yeah, that's fair, Dan. That's completely fair.
Hawthorne is a premium tailored personal care brand that's making it easy for guys to feel and smell their best. Hawthorne is a fun and convenient way to get super high quality products tailored specifically for men. They give you free shipping on your order, and if you decide you're not satisfied with your product, they'll even give you free shipping on the return and give you new suggestions based on your feedback. Hawthorne has a quiz where they ask you what is important to you, both in terms of your self-care and your smell and the world. I took this quiz, and they asked me a bunch of questions, and one of them was about what you look for in a deodorant, and it involved, do you want a deodorant that is going to stop sweat? Do you want a deodorant that is going to make you smell better? Do you want a deodorant that is environmentally conscious? And I love the fact that those three questions are included in this quiz, because check, check, check. Those are all important. I'm very sweaty, and I love the rainforest. And I enjoyed the quiz. It was easy. It was quick. And my results ended up with a bunch of recommendations for deodorants, soaps, conditioner, body wash, cologne, and shampoo. And I bought them all because I love them all so much. I trusted the results of this quiz, and I really enjoy them. My favorite is I got a dual cologne. One is for work and one is for play. And I have obviously been working at home, but that has not stopped me from waking up, taking my shower, walking my dog, drinking my coffee, putting on my work cologne, putting in a 9 to 5. And then as soon as the clock strikes 5:01, you better believe I'm putting that play cologne on. So do what I did. Take Hawthorne's quiz today and get started on your personalized self-care routine by going to hawthorne.co with promo code QQ to get 10% off your first purchase. That's HAWTHORNE.co. Promo code QQ. Okay, can I ask a question?
Yeah, go.
Quick question. Is there anyone from your past, ideally middle school or high school, whom you haven't talked to in many years that you would like to interview or be interviewed by live on stage? I have a few, as always, if you need time to think.
Yeah, please go first.
Yeah. An obvious one is like a bully, because I've had several bullies growing up, but the one that stands out is one I never had a conversation with ever in my life, but every day, every single day at the same time, he pushed me. He was a fifth grader when I was a fourth grader, and I would be walking west to my next class, and he'd be walking east to his next class, and every single day when our paths crossed, he pushed me into a wall. I never fought back. I never tried to avoid it. It became so commonplace that my friends knew it was coming, so we would stop in mid-conversation. I'd be like, I kind of have a crush on this girl, Desi, but I think she's got a crush on, oh, hold on, I have a thing. And then I'd get pushed into a wall, and then we'd be like, anyway, I think she's totally out of my league. What do you guys think? It's, to be clear, not like a thing that haunts me. It was never painful. Like, it didn't hurt getting pushed into the wall, and it just became so funny to me, like, comedically. I admired his dedication, because even way back then, somewhere deep inside, I knew I had a fondness for long bits with no payoff. But part of me genuinely wants to know, hey, why'd you do that? You were older but shorter than me. Was that part of it? Did you need to feel powerful? And was there something about me that implied I would never, under any circumstances, either fight back or report you to the principal? If so, how did you become so intuitive? What was the thing about me that communicated that? And of course, I'd close with, and so are you like happy now?
Yeah. Whatever was lacking in your life, is it finally fulfilled?
Did I do it? Did you pushing me for 52 weeks a year? Was that good? Did that work?
Man, that sucks.
Yeah.
I don't like that guy.
No. But I would interview him. I would also interview any of my Little League baseball coaches, because I was so bad at it. And I genuinely want to know what they ever thought when they drafted me. Because I know that, like, Little League sports in New Jersey, and I assume everywhere, they're not like, no one is building dynasties. The coaches get together and they're like, I'm a coach and my son is playing, so I have my son, obviously. And then the rest of it, they've like clearly ranked kids somewhere behind the scenes. And I was always on a team in baseball and basketball where there was like a clear talented person who might have a future in this sport. Like they pick a LeBron James and also a Daniel O'Brien and they put them on the same team. And I genuinely wonder, I want to like sit with one of my Little League baseball coaches and be like, how upset were you when I was on your team? Or like, did you gamble on the wrong good baseball player?
Did you think there was any hope for me?
Right.
Did you see some raw talent that you wanted to chisel away at?
Because I was right field every year of baseball except one. And right field is where you stick the famously the worst Little League players are there. And the one year that I wasn't there, we actually have footage of it. I was catcher for 1 year of my entire baseball life. I was catcher and I never caught a single ball, which I don't know if this is too inside sports for our listeners, but is in a lot of ways the titular obligation of the position. And in addition to not catching a single ball, there's one clip of me as catcher and the inning ends and the rest of the team leaves and my parents are filming me and they're like, all right, and that's the end of the inning. Oh, he's not moving. Oh, honey, go. Honey, the inning's over. Honey, and I'm just sitting there and I'm like not frozen with fear. I'm just stuck in my thoughts, which were probably just like thinking about bugs. Like, oh, do bugs know that they're bugs and can never be bigger than bugs and be humans? And does that make them sad? Or like, do they not care because they're happy that they don't have to go to school? These are my thoughts. And then eventually some adult taps me on the shoulder and is like, it's time to go to the dugout, Daniel. And I just like cheerily walked away. These are all things to express just how bad and disinterested I was in baseball. And I want to sit down with one of my coaches and be like, did you think I was the thing that was going to tank our season?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I suffered from that. I think I told you on this podcast that when I was in eighth grade, I was forced to play on the seventh grade team because I wasn't good enough to be on the eighth grade team. And they had to play me in the eighth grade team for the least amount of time possible. So I would be allowed to play for 10 seconds a game, even if we were way up. Mm-hmm. But I would love to hear what your coaches have to say about that. Because surely they were like, they went through it. They're like, who did I get? Now, who do I have to have?
Right. Really, I want to be in the fly in the wall in the meeting when all the coaches are drafting their teams and them and like the names getting reduced and reduced and reduced and knowing that there's like four names left and I'm inevitably one of those names.
They had a rating system, I'm sure of it too, which means
absolutely
you had a label next to you. And I'm so curious to know what it was.
Yeah. Like, which is a thing that I kind of intuitively knew early on when after I was a catcher for 1 year, the fact that like no matter what happened between seasons, I'm in fourth grade and I'm playing Little League and like Daniel right field, I'm like, okay, that's written down somewhere.
Yeah,
they know, they're not even considering putting me at second base.
I have a humiliating memory from childhood of, and then I'll answer your question, but in baseball, they didn't divide up the teams to make them more even. There was an A team, a B team, and a C team in the summers. And like the A team was, you just take all the good kids, you put them on that team. You take the kids who understand the basics of the game and put them on the B team. And then the C team was the catchers who don't leave after the inning's over.
Do they play against each other?
No.
Does this happen?
So then when you play the other teams in the Valley, which is like you go play in Basalt or in Rifle, these other towns, they also have A, B, and C teams. And so you're making it a competitive for the kids of the same talent level as you. But you all knew. I mean, you knew immediately which team you were on because they were called A, B, and C. Mm-hmm. And
oh, God.
I was on the B team. A coach, we had a shortstop, John Nielsen, who was a just like a physical specimen, even as a child, was so good at sports. And after our first game, the coach pulled him aside and said, "I'm thinking of moving you up to the A team." And I had had an okay game. So I went up to the coach and I said, "Would you consider moving me up to the A team too?" And he said, "I'll think about it." Like trying not to laugh. Coach Ennewald. Yep. Anyway, I'll answer your question. There is one person that comes to mind in middle school. I won't say his full name. His name is Ben. But okay. Ben came to school one day and said he had been in a car accident and was on what looked like, I want to call them like scoliosis crutches, or like what are the crutches that you use that are like a more permanent fixture where the brace is on the forearm?
Like Walt Jr. from Breaking Bad?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Like, so like, yeah. And he had some of those that were too tall for him, and he had a boot. He had like a, I guess like an air cast or something that was also too big for his foot. It was for an adult. And had a harrowing story about how his car had gone off of a cliff and his family had almost died and he had broken his leg. And like kids were just all around him, like absorbed with it. And like hobbled through the hallways every single day to class. This went on for a while, and suspicion started to grow that the whole thing was completely made up, because somebody had seen someone had seen his mom in the grocery store and she was fine. But all of us were like, "I think he's fucking lying," after a little while. And then after a while, sure enough, the cast came out. He stopped wearing the cast, but he kept using the crutches and would like limp, and then got rid of those and then just started limping around for a while. And then it gradually, the limp just sort of went away. Committed to it so hard that if he was lying, I want to know so badly, because he stuck to it. And if it wasn't, what the fuck? What doctor gave him that bullshit?
Yeah. Ugh. So you want to interview him to catch him?
Well, I want to interview him and just like see what he was like, what the thought, if it was a lie, and I'm just like hoping it was, what led to that? Like what
And like, because if this is high school, right?
Middle school.
Middle school. Yeah. So if it's a lie, it's a lie for attention.
Yes.
Which generally means it's a lie for like, I want sympathy from the preferred sex that I want to be interested in me. And I'm always fascinated by those kinds of lies of like, do you think you're this damage would be so profound and character defining that someone would in turn fall in love with you and like nurse you back to health, which I know is a thing that you are particularly interested in.
Yes. That first day, just at recess, the crowd, as we just like followed him around, and he was very stoic about it, but also like, "I don't really want to talk about it." And that just,
oh, he's
so
fucking lying. He's lying.
We just were so much more interested then too. And like, just absorbed with this kid. And then it just, things started to not add up for us after a while. And now I want to know, first of all, I would ask him, "Were you lying?" Then I would ask him, "Did your parents know you were doing this? And like, was this their gear? Like, where did this stuff come
from? How did you leave the house with that?"
Yeah. Every single morning. How did you can't hide that in your backpack. Did they know what you were doing?
Oh, that would be so great.
Then I would interview his parents.
Yeah, of course.
So what was the divorce like at that time?
Yeah, why were you guys so preoccupied that you missed this?
What made him do this? What kind of cry for help was this? But God, I want to know so badly.
That's a very good answer. Do you have any others?
I would ask. There are people that... I didn't leave things on very good terms with. There, I had a girlfriend when I was in high school that...
Brag.
This is going to sound... This is not great. But like when you're young, you're in relationships, I think, sometimes to just like practice at being in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not necessarily feeling the love and everything that you would see in movies where like high schoolers are feeling things so deeply. You're not really feeling much at all, but you're like, I should know how to do this kind of thing. I should know how to be in a relationship. And so you're just like, you're just going through the motions and doing things from movies and seeing if they work and that kind of stuff. Like, you're not good at it. You're practicing.
Right. And they don't make movies about people who don't know how to be in relationships.
Right. And I had a girlfriend who I think was feeling a lot of those things. And I wasn't. And I just let it carry on for a long time to the point where she was like noticing things were not quite right. And I was still pretending that things were fine up and through us breaking up. And then I spoke at my graduation and she sat very, very close to the podium and just cried out loud.
In your stupid fucking tent where you went to school, you're allowed to pick where you sit. It's not alphabetical. What are you talking about?
She was a junior when I was a senior.
And she's sitting at your graduation?
Well, she's come to this graduation. So there's the crowd. Let me try. So it's outside. It's out in the grass. There's some bleachers where all of the kids sit who are graduating. And that's 20 kids tops. Mm-hmm. Then there's a tent that everybody else can come and sit in. And when that tent capacity fills up, people start filling up just sitting on the grass in front. And the podium is out in front of the bleachers.
Okay. So, okay. So the closest she could be as someone who is not graduating is on the grass in front of the podium?
Yes.
That's absurd. That's a bad system. Write to your high school and tell them it's wrong. Unless your high school, I don't know, collapsed into some fucking cave somewhere or was eroded as it should be. That's everything you're talking about makes no sense. It should be the speaker and then the people who are graduating, and then beyond that, the people who are witnessing them.
It's not how we roll, man.
I'm getting hung up on these strange details, but I've known you for fucking 12 years, and there are so many details of your life that you've hid from me because you don't know how weird they are.
I'll send you a picture of my graduation. In it, I'm wearing a pink sequence vest because you're allowed to wear whatever you want at graduation.
Okay, I'm sorry I derailed you. I mean, I'm not sorry because I think it's important that our listeners know that your life is not normal. But please go on.
So she sat next to the podium and cried at me. And at the time I was like, you know, you're young and you're selfish and you're like, why would she do that to me? But now I'm older in my life and I would love to sit down with her and be like, hey, your life probably turned out great. I imagine. I'm really, really sorry for how terrible I was to you. Are you okay?
I'm sorry. I'm still hung up on this.
Yeah.
Your life is so absurd.
I don't know. I think there's a lot of people probably had a similar experience to that.
It doesn't. The fact that there are so many movies that feature graduation sequences that all seem kind of similar.
Yeah.
And the fact that yours is vaguely similar, except there's room for potentially strangers to sit on the grass in front of the podium and cry at the speaker, means to me that you haven't lived a normal life. Do you feel like that's an unfair thing that I've said?
I don't know. I don't have any context for it because I think maybe people who go to small schools, this is not so uncommon. I mean, we didn't have
a buffer where random people can like just sit closer than anyone else.
Yeah, the tent is really where you're supposed to be sitting, but there is overflow and it all spills out the front. I don't know that it's that strange. Also, like we didn't have prom.
I know you didn't have prom. That makes sense. If you don't have enough students, you don't have prom. That makes sense to me. What doesn't make sense is like graduates sit here.
Yeah.
Close family of graduates sit here a little bit farther to take pictures.
Oh, I see what you're, where you're coming. Okay. No, let me try and explain the, okay. So the way that it works is we're not sitting looking up at the stage, up at like the podium and stuff when we're graduating. The graduates are on these bleachers facing the audience behind the podium. The same way that like at a normal graduation, you would have all the teachers lined up, the faculty lined up back there. This is bleachers, two rows or whatever, and all the kids are sitting up there and everyone is back in these tents facing them, watching this graduation happen. The podium's a little bit closer to the tents.
Here's a quick question for you. Mm-hmm. Because you grew up in a pit in Colorado, but then you went to a normal place like California when you studied at Occidental in California. When was the first time that you realized in your life that your upbringing was different?
Immediately in college. Immediately.
Okay, it wasn't before then. It wasn't from like watching movies. You didn't watch like, again, American Pie or even fucking Scream or anything like that and realized, oh, this movie is attempting to do a depiction of a typical college experience and it is very foreign from my own. You didn't think that? You didn't like watch a single movie or TV show about high school or anything like that that made you feel like
you things are different.
Were an alien?
Well, there's like Saved by the Bell and stuff like that, where there's clearly hallways with lockers. And like Fast Times at Ridgemont High, I guess. I knew that it was different, but I didn't realize how different that it was. The same. It was different in the same way where like you watch a movie at the end of a date, people kiss on the doorstep. That's just a movie thing. That's not something you have to do in real life. That's just like a thing that always happens in the movies. And so this was just how movies were presenting the idea of high school. And I was like, yeah, okay, great. I get it. I understand it, but that's not my experience. And then didn't think that that made me too different from anybody else. I thought that was like, I can still see the other side of the cultural lake. Like I know I'm not that far from it. And then it wasn't until I went to actual college and met other people that I realized, oh, I had a very different experience than everybody else. And that,
how do you have so many amazing friends? How did that not make it hard to make friends when you went to college? And you, well, to me, it seems like you'd be starting from way back.
So my graduating class was, I think, 20 kids. Of those 20, three of us went to Occidental. So it was nice that I had two other people who had come from the same experience as me. And then also, I mean, I'd been in a city before. I didn't really have friends there, but that it actually helped, if anything. There was like, I can remember one time as a freshman having somebody had skis in their dorm. And I was like, let me ski down the stairs. And everyone was like, what? You can do that? And I was like, yeah. All you do is you just stand on them and you lock in your shoes. As long as the bindings are tight enough, you can squeeze your shoes in there and you can just ski down the stairs. And that became like a point of like, people were like, yeah, I want to know that guy. He's interesting. And so all these life experiences that I'd had suddenly made me more popular. And so it was very easy to make friends in those circumstances.
Okay.
But that growing up, it was the opposite. I mean, growing up, I was not the kid that was good at any of that stuff. There was kids that, you know, as I told you, like they've had entire careers where they were sponsored or they competed in the X Games. And that was sort of the expectation of, I think, a lot of kids from that valley growing up. And I was not one of those. So I was just thinking like, I'm just not like them. I'm not like the other kids. That's okay. I'll figure out my thing. I think maybe it's drama. Maybe it's writing. Maybe it's something else. And then going away to college, nobody had any of those experiences that I had. And so I was the best at them.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, all right. Great.
I feel like I should amend some things that I want to be clear that I'm not angry. I'm very surprised that about how when I met you, you seemed like the most like normal and balanced and confident person that I've ever met. And everything I learned about your past, I can't do the math.
I think that's it. Think
how you ended up to where you are.
I think I was not very confident, and I think I was sort of lonely and living out in the woods. And then just as soon as I got to a place where I felt more like I found people who were like me, as opposed to just like, well, you make friends with who's around you. As soon as I found people that were interested in the same things as me and were on the center of the same just physical level as I was, like mm-hmm. way down low, much lower than everybody that I grew up with. It was such a relief that gave me a lot of confidence. I mean, these kids, they were so good at everything. From the jump too. Like we would start on a sport like kayaking and all of a sudden you'd have a kid who was so good that they're like, all right, we want you to compete in these rodeos or these downriver races. Rodeos are like where you're just like doing tricks in a hole in a river. What's that? It's just like a rapid in the river. And, sure. And they're like so good that they're competing against adults from their first year trying it. Or they became such good skiers that they were getting sponsorships while we were still in high school.
I mean, I feel like you bought a slackline and then you were good at slackline.
That took me a very long time. I just didn't, I'd hide it. I'd hide the practice.
We're running late on this episode. Do you have any other questions?
No. We should. I got to actually go get the all the information about our Twitter and everything like that. But in the meantime, Dan, I just want to give you a chance. I know this time of year, you do like to do a lot of volunteering. You're a very philanthropic person, and I respect that a lot. You sometimes will go to soup kitchens, you've told me. And you said that the reason you particularly like soup kitchens is because you like to feed the homeless people. And because they can't be trusted with money. Do you want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, well, two things. One, we call them unhoused people now. So homeless is actually derogative, and you should feel ashamed for that. And two, I feel like if I give them money, they're just going to spend it on smack.
Okay.
So why don't I give it to them instead in the form of snack?
Jesus, Daniel. I mean, you can't even be mad about that kind of stuff. Because it's good. I mean, it's... All right. On Twitter, you can follow Daniel at @DOB_Inc, assuming he allows you to. You can follow me. I say everybody can. I'm egalitarian. You can follow me at Soren_LTD. You can follow Quick Question at @QQ_Soren and Dan or tweet at them. Our CFO will be monitoring that account and he will answer you most likely. We have an email, qqwithsorenanddaniel@gmail.com. And you can find, follow, hire our producer, sound engineer, editor, Gabe Harder. If you Google him and try and find a phone number, not his website, that won't be helpful. But you just look around. You might see him on the internet somewhere.
Oh yeah, find his phone number. I might have it. I'll bring it up in the next episode. I'll track that down and I'll drop that in.
All right. Bye.
Bye.